order. First, we have roll call.
Bruce Bashung. Terry Brown. Tomas is excused. Judy DeBursa is excused. Greg Fagan is excused. David Flanagan excused. Marcia Hardy is joining us by conference.
Hello.
Glenn Harvey.
Here.
Molly Stone is excused. Mara Newman.
Here.
Andre Verono. Dick Bergevin.
Here.
We do need the forums.
Okay. Then we, what do we, have a consensus that we adopt the agenda?
Yes. Action by consensus.
Okay. All in favor of adopting the agenda?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Passed. Adopted in consensus. Motion to approve the minutes of May 8th and summary of meeting held June 3rd. All in favor?
Well, we can't really approve the minutes, but, well, but I have a problem with the minutes.
Oh, okay. What do we do?
May 8th.
For the meeting?
Well.
Or the summary from the last?
May 8th.
Okay.
It has to do with the description of the conversation of the, about the public involvement plan. And it's not clear to me that it fully reflects the conversation. The last sentence, which says, Ms. Booth responded that MBO staff could keep a log of the comments received from citizens and present them to the CAC for action if necessary. I think that's correct. The question is, what's in the log? And we had a discussion.
Where is this in the minutes?
It's the last sentence of the section on the public involvement plan, page 2.
Okay, that's okay.
We had a discussion about which was, I think, aimed, at least from my perspective, at assuring that there was actually some interaction and involvement as opposed to just an information exchange. And I thought we had talked about not only keeping a log that there were comments, but some substance about what the comments were, so that the CAC, when it gets it, would have some idea about what the what other citizens were concerned about. And I, if it's possible to do so, I'd like to have the minutes expanded to say a log that will include the subject matter of comments and responses, if any, from MPO staff. But just to be sure that the log is complete, that it's not just we received an email message from such and such a person on such and such a date, because that doesn't tell us anything. We should know at least the subject matter.
Okay.
And whether MPO staff responded in any way.
Okay.
Because my point was then, and it is now, that there's a difference between an information plan and an involvement plan. And if you want to involve the public in something and you give them an opportunity to comment, you have to respond to them in some way so that they recognize that their comments were received. Least, minimum. You know, I think, and if the response, in many cases, the response could just be, thank you, your comment is going to be referred to the Citizens Advisory Committee in its next meeting, which it would be in this law business. But in other cases, it might be, a comment might be worth a real response, with information, for example. Now, I describe my concern about this to Nick in an email message that I sent him a few days ago. And in that email message, I t- told him that I fully respect the problems of dedication of resources to things and budget constraints and that sort of thing. And I don't think that, I don't know what the volume of these kinds of comments are and whether what I'm suggesting is an unusual burden on staff. And I asked Nick to think about it.
Sir? Well, I think what I'm hearing is not just expansion of how we track comments received, but then maybe even a monthly reporting to the Citizens Committee?
Well, that's what we talked about in May. We said, and it says here, that they're going to create a log of comments received and present them to the CAC for action if necessary. And I just was hoping that sentence could be expanded to indicate what would be on the log. And I think the minimum should be the subject matter of the comment.
Well, I'm grabbing onto the sentence, or the statement you made today regarding would be presented at the next CAC meeting. And I don't know what we contemplated when we presented the PIP. I don't think it was a monthly reporting.
No, I agree with that.
A regular reporting. So I'm just trying to clarify that we're not introducing new. It's not an unreasonable request, but what we're trying to do here is just discuss the content of what.
Right. And I would think that if using your judgment, if some comments came in that were that you thought were important for us to think about or react to, or to help you react to, then you bring it at the next, your earliest convenience. The timing is not an issue for me. The question is.
I don't have any objection to clarifying the content of the law. I think that's a great suggestion. And I think it's incumbent upon us, and I agree with you, that not only do we track what kind of input we've received, but what we did with it.
Well, that's what we agreed in May, I thought.
Yep.
We agreed that in May, but it wasn't reflected in here, and I thought it should be reflected in the minutes.
Yep.
And then I guess the other question is, does it get reflected in the PIP itself next time it gets modified?
Well, and I think that's where we had said we hope to do a much more thorough job of developing performance measures that we actually measure.
Right.
And report on.
Right.
So yes, we do want to update the PIP to reflect these types of best practice behaviors.
Thank you.
Okay. So are you satisfied, Myron?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's May. Any comments on June minutes? I have one. I didn't know that Commissioner Paulette Burdick was no longer a commissioner.
She is.
Well, she's not on our MPO board anymore.
It says former. Does that mean she's no longer on the MPO?
She is no longer a primary member of the MPO. She's now a designated alternate for the county commission on the MPO board.
Yeah, you might want to
good catch.
Clear how to.
Yes.
How to rephrase it.
Yeah.
Because it says former commissioner Paulette Carter.
It's on the attendance. That's on the attendance
sheet
record.
Right.
Make sure her title is reflected properly.
Because you're talking about, well, that's right.
Former board member, commissioner.
However. Other than that, I had nothing on June. Does anybody else
editors
have any comments?
Editors are terrible people.
On June? Okay. So, by consensus, all in favor of adopted minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Comments from the chair? I have no comments. Executive director's report?
Okay, so before we jump into that, let me make a clarification. So the bylaws say that if there's not a quorum present, then agenda items needing approval receive a consensus vote, which will be forwarded to the MPO. Now, I think that was regarding items that were going to be coming before the MPO board, so that this committee would still be permitted to provide input, even absent a quorum. I don't know that that meant you could adopt minutes by a consensus vote.
So we may end up having to defer your minutes.
We're saying if you can, do it. If you can't,
yes,
we'll go to the next one.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Executive Director's report.
Okay. I think three items that I want to highlight for you, and then one I'm going to show you that we're pretty excited about. So, on the
every time you show up.
Items for your general awareness. First, we have distributed the updated MTO interlocal agreement that will take the board's membership from 19 people to 21 people. Those additional two people on the MPO board that will be giving a voting seat are going to be establishing a full-time seat for both Royal Palm Beach and Green Acres. Currently, those two municipalities rotate that one seat on an annual basis, and establishing a new permanent seat for the Village of Palm Springs. But in order to do that, we have to distribute an updated interlocal agreement to all of the member agencies for execution. So that process is underway. We look forward to receiving those executed agreement pages back from each of those agencies so that we can then invite those members to be part of the formal board.
And that will increase the membership to 21 as well?
Takes this committee's maximum from 19 to 21. That's right. But we will probably have to amend our bylaws for this committee to reflect that change. We haven't done that yet.
Oh, okay. Now, is the Village of, what is it?
Palm Springs?
Is that the next biggest community?
By population, it is, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be the next largest community by population. In the municipality incorporated.
Right.
Other point I want to make sure this group was aware, we did send you an email about there was some news related last week to the governor's veto of quiet zone funding. I want to make sure that everyone on this committee is aware so you can tell your friends that has no effect on the MPO's ability to fund and implement a quiet zone on the FEC corridor in Palm Beach County. We were not counting on state grant funds that were vetoed by the governor. We were counting on federal discretionary gas tax revenue that's sub-allocated in the MPO. That revenue stream was unaffected by the governor's action.
Now, if the governor had allowed that to pass, that would have had a state grant to do that work?
The appropriation language, so the state money was actually in the budget last year,
right.
And they were asking for an additional $10 million for the fiscal year 16. And that's the 16 money was what got vetoed. 15 was actually in place and available. The state grant funds for quiet zone improvements had two limitations on them that made it less attractive for us in Palm Beach County. They said you had to have a 50% match, and your 50% match had to come from either non-federal, non-private sources. I said that poorly. Your match had to come from non-federal, non-private sources. What that means is, to attract state money to build quiet zone improvements, you couldn't use all of North Florida's investment, and you couldn't use the MPO's federal money as a matching investment. You had to come up with local dollars to attract state dollars. And the cities all said, well, we've got an option of investing local dollars to attract state money, or we can let the MPO and all of North Florida pay the whole ticket. Option one is our dollars on the table. Option two is other people's money. So the cities all said, let's go with option two. We aren't really going to avail ourselves of that state funding opportunity.
Okay.
So just so everyone understands how that decision process kind of fell.
I'm reminded, if I may interrupt for just a second, of something that a member of Congress once told me. The rule of politicians is, when presented with a trough, oink.
Well, in this case, it was a trough that would have cost them money. The state money would have.
Yeah.
So they said, all right.
Right.
We're not interested in eating at that trough. There's an admission fee. Third item for you is the updated TIP map. I think some of you may have noticed it as you came in. Wanted to give you an opportunity to be aware that this is created. The PDF or electronic version will be available on our website. It's a very good, colorful illustration Luke Lambert put together from our office of which types of projects are going to be built, where in the county we're investing project funding in, just so you can start to familiarize yourself with the projects and the locations.
Is that the, that's the 1721 tip?
Well, we're going to try to keep all these different calendars separate. This is a reflection of the fiscal year 16 through 20 tip that was heard by this committee last month and then adopted by the MPO board last month. What we're talking about this later in this meeting is the priorities to be added in to the 17 through 21 tip next cycle.
As I looked at the map, last month we talked about taking the PE out of Atlantic Avenue west of Lyons to 441. And I noticed it's still on there.
So I'll talk about that when we get to the priorities item and give you the full explanation.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to do one more information item before we get to the audiovisual presentation. And that is, I wanted to draw your attention to these infographics that we have in the back side of the room here. This is a new initiative. We developed these graphics in partnership with our South Florida Commuter Services team. And we actually brought these downtown with us to the MPO board meeting, which happens in the county commission chamber, not in their main chamber, but in their, what they call the McKinney Conference Room on the 12th floor. It's a pretty drab building and a pretty drab room, and so we could stick these on the wall and kind of create a fun transportation atmosphere. So we're really excited about that and want to show them off. Any feedback you have, any questions? Melissa Booth is here, Public Information Officer, and we'd be glad to assist with or try to refine and improve. These aren't very expensive to produce, but I think they're eye-catching and pretty cool. So any suggestions you have for additional items, we'd be happy to hear that too. All right. That gets us to the fun audiovisual presentation. It's pretty short, but wanted to let you know that the MPO did, in partnership with Commuter Services and the Broward MPO, create an informational video. The video is actually going to be running in three of our main movie theaters this July 4th weekend. The Movie Co. downtown West Palm at City Place, Cinemark down in Boca Raton, and the Cobb Theater downtown in the Gardens. And we thought we'd give you guys an advanced screening and get some input or feedback on what do you think of the video.
And actually, it'll run for 2 weeks, and everyone in your show received it by email. So please forward to your friends, give us your comments.
We will
watch
receive it,
or
we should have received it.
You should have received it. It was emailed out last night. If you didn't,
no.
Let me check. No one here got it?
The company?
Yes.
I didn't see it in mine. It was Marcia.
So, Melissa, we can check on our distribution list for the CAC and make sure that we're getting it out to all the members.
Well, I'm sure it's correct. It may be the servers because of the number of people went to, but.
All right, here we go.
I'll send it individually to.
Every time you fill up a portion of the money collected at the pump is used by your local MPO. The MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, is the agency of local officials making transportation things happen. And these agencies exist across the nation. They are the brains that oversee how the funds are managed and which projects get done when. Projects that affect how people and things get around, like adding new sidewalks and bike lanes, fixing up bus shelters, enhancing transit, as well as other projects like improving airports and seaports. The MPO's mission is to implement a transportation plan that reflects your region's shared vision for the future. Get involved at palmbeachmpo.org.
Good. Very nice. Short and sweet.
Doesn't that sound like Dennis Leary in the fourth quarter?
My kids actually saw it last night. They picked up on that. They said, that looks like just, it looks, reminds us of those sport commercials. So that's what we were going for. Anyway, if you have any suggestions, feedback, it was a fun project to work on, and we're going to hope to get a little bit of mileage out of it, circulate it, help people understand what an MPO is. All right. So, Mr. Vice Chair, that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Any members of the public here that wants to speak? Let's move on to the motion on the 17 through 21 priority projects.
All right, so we're going to do a brief presentation for you. We'll run through it and then take any questions you may have.
Can we ask questions as you go along, or do you want to have them at the end?
I think it's probably going to be useful to ask them as we go along because it's a lot of information, and if you wait to the end, you can overlook things. Okay, so clarification for you, this is a timeline to the fiscal year 17 through 21 tip. Last month, the MPO adopted the 16 to 20 tip, so we're on the clock now, starting the next cycle. In fact, we've already had a few steps in the next cycle, but we're moving towards adoption of the 17 to 21 tip. So starting backwards from the end, the MPO will adopt the 17 to 21 tip in June of 2016. So that's where we're going through this whole process. But we're backing ourselves up to where we are right now. So in the spring of this year, Do you want me to stop pointing? On behalf of Professor
Olivo? No. Is she able to see the presentation?
No.
No?
Okay. For Marcia's benefit, it will be posted pretty promptly to our website where the agendas can be found, so you'll have a chance to look at the presentation that way, Marcia.
Okay, so in the spring, we received applications from a bunch of folks for our local initiatives program and for our transportation alternatives program. We've reviewed those applications, we've sent them to DOT, they've reviewed them and identified some eligibility issues. And I want to say it's important to note, we have given those eligibility comments over to the applicants and we're going to be working with them to resolve those issues. If an applicant cannot resolve eligibility issues, we intend to take that project off of the list that is put before you today. So the list right now contains all the applications for the local initiatives program and all of the applications that were able to be funded in the TA program, Transportation Alternatives Program, with the caveat that under the local initiatives, if somebody can't fulfill an eligibility issue, they'll be removed. So I just want to make that point clear. So right now we're at the point where you are being asked to consider the lists. We'll talk our way through each of the three lists that are before you. Then the lists get sent to the Department of Transportation. They come up with a way to fund the projects on those lists. They present in that funding scenario to the MPO. In this year, I wanted to highlight too that we're doing all these steps a little bit earlier than normal, about 2 months earlier because of the legislative intent to meet in January of 2016 instead of March. So that accelerates a lot of these earlier steps to get to that end goal. So final end of the game is the DOT presents the work program, we review it, then they take it back and get legislative approval, at least for the first fiscal year, to authorize the funding of revenue on the projects. Then it comes back in June for the MPO's adoption of the tip. So that's where we are. Now, question about reallocating the money off of the Atlantic Avenue corridor and onto the Palm Tran maintenance facility. The MPO board was ready to act on the committee's recommendations to change the funding in fiscal year 17 to make that effective, to affect that modification. And a week before the board meeting, we get this letter from the DOT district secretary. This letter says, it is important to note the secretary would not be in a position to approve a tip that is inconsistent with the STIP. So, if you choose as an MPO board to change the funding in fiscal year 17, we will not approve your tip. And projects in your area would be in jeopardy of not being implemented. The board heard that response and said, okay, we don't really want to be on this island alone. Let's have this conversation about the role of the MPO in adopting the tip through our statewide agency, but let's not jeopardize the projects in our MPO being implemented. So they adopted the tip without a modification.
Okay.
Hence, Atlantic Avenue design stays on the map for fiscal year 17.
Could you explain what the STIP is? I know what a tip is.
So, per federal regulation, the TIP is the MDO's five-year funding document allocating revenue to projects. The STIP is the statewide Transportation Improvement Program. By federal law, the statewide Transportation Improvement Program is the collection of the MDO adopted TIPs gathered together and bundled up into one big document, along with the FDOT identified projects outside of the urban areas that are addressed by MPOs.
So that's what's approved by the legislature.
So the STIP is what is given to Federal Highway,
After the approval by the legislature.
Right. After the legislature approves the first year of funding, then they go, then the DOT collectively goes to Federal Highway and says, here's our collection of the 27 TIPs and the rural area projects into the statewide program.
So this implies that the local MPO cannot change its mind about anything that has, once it has appeared in the STIP. Is that correct?
I think this paragraph is very interesting. It does imply that the MPO does not have the authority to change the content of the TIP without the Secretary's approval.
Does it say that, or does it say since the STIP is the first year of the five-year plan that you can't change the first year?
The STIP is actually a multi-year document as well.
Right. Okay.
And
so you can only change it by doing a new TIP. You can't change it within the TIP for that year. That's what it's saying to me.
But this also says that the MPO is adopting a TIP for the next five-year period. And the secretary is saying that if that's inconsistent with last year's STIP, which was the accumulation of all the TIPs plus other things, he won't approve it.
But it's not what he's saying.
The STIP comes after the TIPs, right? The sum of all the TIPs.
So there's a process nuance here. What I explained to you, and you captured very well, is the federal process, the process that is, as it is written in federal regulation. There's a different process as it is enacted in the state of Florida. So in the state of Florida, the fiscal year 16 through 20 STIP is created from the department's work program database, regardless of what the MPOs approve in their TIP. So that's why the secretary could say, we're not going to approve a TIP that is inconsistent with the STIP for fiscal year 16 through 20, because they're creating the STIP from a different source, not the MPO's adopted TIP.
But aren't they really saying, you sent us a TIP in December? The MPO board approved the preliminary TIP, which they sent to the state.
That's their argument. They presented the work program, the contents of the work program database to the MPO in December.
Right.
And the MPO at that time had an opportunity to object to or comment on the work program.
Right. And since you chose not to deal with this issue at that time, you can't deal with it now. Or from that date until after the TIP is over.
I think that's correct.
So you have up to December to make your changes, as long as you can get agreement from FDOT.
To make your comments.
Comments, and
then FDOT will either address those comments or note your input and continue forward.
Okay.
I guess on the surface, it seems to me, I mean, I don't know a lot about this, but it seems, and I go back to ICE-T, the whole idea was to devolve decision-making to the local communities. And this is saying that the local communities can't change their minds about their priorities of what they would like to do once that's been incorporated into the state's plan. Is that correct?
I think the letter is saying, when you get to adoption of the TIP, it's too late. If you want to change your mind, you need to do it in your priority list, which is the item on your agenda for consideration today. And then, if you give the Department of Transportation a priority list, and they do the best they can with all the pressures that are put on them to put money onto your priorities, and you don't like the way they did that task, that you don't have the authority to change it. That's what I think it says.
Okay.
And does this follow through year to year? Or is this only, I mean, I can understand that if the MPO says in December, these are our priorities, and the state puts them all together and takes them to the legislature approves them, you ought not to be able to go back and change that. But the new tip is next year. Are they saying the new tip has to be also consistent with last year's STIP?
No, I don't think that's the case. In fact, and maybe I should just jump to the next slide and say, while the board did not change the tip, they took this concern raised by the department secretary and said, okay, we don't want to rock the boat in this situation. They did follow up with the other item that was on your agenda for recommendation last month, this funding resolution, saying, okay, we're not going to rock the boat on the adoption of the 16 through 20 tip, but we're going to clearly set forth what we expect to be done with money when you do the 17 through 21 program, when you try to match up revenue with projects. And so this is a bullet point reminder of what was in that resolution that the MPO board adopted. Now, the full resolution is actually in the backup material for your priority list, but I wanted to put it up here. And essentially, they said, let's not have the situation we had this past time where you're funding CIS projects and local, what we consider an off-system project like the Lions Road Safety. Don't build those projects with MPO discretionary revenue. Don't negatively affect the MPO's ability to advance its own priorities by using its money to do those types of projects. Second, they said, let's make sure that MPO major projects are funded with this combination of federal and state revenue sources in order to make sure there's enough money in that pot to advance our big picture projects, our big ticket projects. And then third, they said, local initiatives, let's make sure that we allocate as much as possible of our SU funds to the program in 17 through 19, and let's go through the process and start now of putting all of that money, that $17 million per year, all of that $17 million in SU funds to the program in fiscal years 20 and 21. And then lastly, they said, consistent with past practice, let's continue to fund our transportation alternatives program with the transportation alternatives revenue. That one's pretty straightforward. That was just a restatement of practice that's already in place. So it's really these first three bullet points that we're saying, let's implement these funding decisions, or let's make funding decisions consistent with these expectations. That's going to go forward along with our updated priority list that's on your agenda for approval today. And we're going to find out how well this new collaborative set of expectations gets implemented when the department comes back and presents the work program in October. So we want you to understand what we're asking and then help us in the review when it comes back to us in October of whether or not these expectations were implemented faithfully. So a few frequently asked questions I think I'm going to try to anticipate on the priority list, and then we'll get to the actual three project lists as well. First is, why do we have three lists? We have a major project list, we have a local initiative list, and we have a transportation alternatives list. The reason is because we have three different funding sources. So we're trying to segregate projects with how they're going to be implemented and which funds they're eligible to use. Second, why did we do applicant presentations? A number of you were invited to participate and came out and listened to the applicant presentations. Frankly, we think that was a bad idea, to have the committees participate in that large environment with, I think we had 30 people sitting in the audience while the applicants presented. It was probably worthwhile in the first round, just so you could figure out what the applications entail and how we implemented our scoring system. But what we really want your input on is refinements to our scoring system. We expect to have the future applicants come and make presentations to the MPO staff so that we can interact with them a little bit personally about what's in their applications, but we're not going to make the committee sit through those types of presentations again. But if you don't like the way the projects get ranked at the end of that process, then we want you to tell us, hey, let's go back and fix that scoring system because it's putting the wrong projects on the top. How are the projects ranked on the list? Generally speaking, the projects are advanced because they scored high against the system we derive from our goals, objectives, and values in our adopted plan. I say generally because there's a nuance to this. Under the TA program, we have work to do in refining the scoring system. The Transportation Alternatives Program has a system that's been in place for a long time. It's relatively subjective and probably needs some attention to bring it into greater consistency with our long-range plan. Why are we showing funding for projects in the priority list tables? The answer to that is, although it's a lot more detail and it's potentially too much information, and we hope it's not, but it's potentially that way, we want to convey both the total project cost, how much of that project's funded in the TIP, and then how much are we really seeking, or how much more money is needed to be able to implement the projects on our list. And then last, if a project is on the list, is funding guaranteed? And the answer is unfortunately not. I mentioned already we still have to do some final eligibility screening and clearing on the new projects for local initiatives. At the same time, I want everyone to be aware that what we're doing is sending a project request list to the department for funding. Then they go through what they call the gaming cycle and try to identify if there's enough revenue to fund at least an initial phase of the projects that are put on this list. So it's not a guarantee for funding if you're on the list today. This is not programming dollars against projects. This is our request for the department to do that programming on our behalf. So that said, I'm going to turn it over to Seth Contreras. Seth's our long-range plan coordinator to talk about just the major project list. And again, feel free to interrupt him with questions and we'll keep moving forward.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, so for the first list of priority projects, we have the major project category. That table is in your agenda. We've highlighted a couple of changes to that list. Number one, the Aldor, Florida Quiet Zone funding. If you look at it, it's number six on the list. If you look at fiscal year 16, right now it's showing $5.4 million in the currently adopted TIP. Originally, that was $6.1 million in last year's TIP, so that number has now reduced by $700,000, so that's one difference we see on the list. Second change, we have now added one additional project to the list, number 12 at the bottom there. A multimodal corridor study of US 1. The intent there is we're going to do that study on two phases. So the first phase that we have on the list right there would be for the southern section, so starting in Boca Raton and then going north to the West Palm Beach Intermodal Center. So questions we have for the committee today.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Rank number one.
I know
this has been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
The question is, in the immediate, in the far right-hand column, it says advanced construction to FY17. Is that number one priority, too? I mean, how do we interpret the thing on the right-hand column?
I think that's if there's a funding need or a change in the current funding for the project, then that's what we're trying to highlight. So the request.
So the number one priority, if you've got some extra money in FY17, would be to move that. Is that right?
From the revenue sources available for major projects, yes. Would be to try to bring funding back to the earlier years. And that's consistent with the MBO board's objection in December of last year.
Right,
when they heard the
delay,
they said, we object to the delay. We want that project to be restored to fiscal year 17 or thereabouts.
Okay.
On the second project, you show construction fiscal year 16, right?
Yes.
So why is that here? How, if we're looking at 17 through 21, why is it on the list of priorities? Wouldn't it have to be issued by the end of 16, which would not be part of the 17-21 TIP?
So that's a good question. What I'm trying to do with this list
is to keep everyone
informed until the project has been authorized to use the construction money. So I would propose that we take it off next year once we're sure that the contract has been awarded or the funding has been encumbered in 16. And there's no chance that it's going to be deferred to 17.
Okay.
I'm not certain that that's going to happen with this project, so I think it's worthwhile leaving it on the list again.
So in reality,
so
you're putting it in 17 also.
That one, you know, ideally, we don't have the list up there, but ideally, it'll go in 16, and we'll be able to take it off the list next year. We'll just put it in the notes saying that project is going to be under construction shortly. It won't be on this, you won't see it on this list next year.
Okay.
But if something should happen and it's delayed,
then
we wouldn't have to reintroduce it.
Oh, okay. So when they do the 17th, when FDOT comes back to you in the fall of this year,
yeah,
it will show as fiscal year 17.
It should be gone. It should be out of the program because the money should be encumbered and ready to be spent, or even partially spent by the fall.
Oh, by the fall of this year.
Correct.
Because fiscal year 16 ends next September.
Well, for the state, fiscal year 16 started today.
That's an interesting question, because if you look at the footnote on the TIP, it says the TIP fiscal year is the federal fiscal year, not the state fiscal year.
That's correct.
So, but the priority list is the state fiscal year, not the...
No, everything we do with money should be federal, I think. I mean, which is October.
Which is October 1st.
Yes. Okay. I'm not sure how that translates into the, what should we do here? But it's an important detail to pay attention to.
Okay. So,
sorry, Sam.
That's okay. So question number one, are we ready to add a multimodal study of the US-1 corridor from West Palm Beach to Boca to the list, and should the limits extend further north? And keep in mind, this multimodal corridor study, it's being pulled off of the cost feasible list from the Long Range Transportation Plan 2040. It's shown in there as an express bus service along US-1, which will be part of the study. We wanted to extend that scope to include other modes, potentially bike and ped.
Is this similar to what we did between the Broward County Line and Glades Road?
The study?
Where we studied that section when University Drive went away.
Oh, State Road 7 study?
Yes.
It would be...
Same type of study, different...
Yeah. It would be a similar study.
Okay.
That one was actually a PD&E, a project development and environmental analysis, for consideration of widening of the State Road 7 corridor from 6 to 8 lanes. That was the initial intended outcome. And then over the process of the analysis, the outcome was backed down to let's make multimodal investments, a wider pathway, a buffered bike lane, and enhanced transit amenities to support other modes of transportation, because we really don't see a demand for a wider corridor. This case, the nuance here is that we would not be intending to widen US-1
right.
as the initial outcome. The initial intended outcome would be to establish a premium express bus service from the south end of Boca Raton up to the West Palm Intermodal Center. Understanding that through the analysis process, that recommended outcome may change.
Okay.
All right. That's it.
That's
it for the major projects. So then we're going to flip over to Luke and let him tell you about the local initiatives portion of the list.
Are we supposed to answer these questions now?
Well, so the US-1 question. We think it's the right next thing to do. We've gotten a lot of piecemeal requests for analysis of portions of the corridor from cities along the corridor. It's the next project in the list in our long-range plan. But we want you to understand that we're proposing this be added on at the bottom. And we want you to say, yeah, that seems like the right next place to go, or no, we don't think we need to do this yet. So we wanted you to understand that that's a question. It's an opportunity for you to provide input. But if you don't have any objections, then we just move forward.
The question is, do we have a consensus of that we should input it or not? All in favor of inputting it?
What are the alternatives? I mean, if you didn't do this, would you do something else? Is there something in competition for this as a major project?
That's a great question. So we need to, in the major project list, we need to pick off of what's in our long-range plan.
Right.
Identify explicitly.
Right.
So the next items, and I'm going from memory, but the next items are express buses on US 1, on Congress Avenue, on Military Trail. So one of those three corridors would be a potential alternative. And widening of more of Atlantic Avenue would be another potential project. And then what was the other one we saw? Oh, the Palm Beach International Airport, the Tri-Rail station, considering a new Tri-Rail station to service the Palm Beach International Airport. So those would be, I think, the top five. And the Atlantic Avenue corridor would be from Lyons Road to Jog Road, widening from four lanes to six lanes. You know, frankly, this is the one that's attracting attention. This is the one that our member agencies are saying is important to them and feels like a priority. I don't know if I have a better answer than it feels like the right project, because transit...
But let me just ask you, you've considered Military Trail as a corridor, and US 1 as a corridor, and you think US 1 as a corridor is a higher priority than Military Trail?
Yes.
The same kind of study?
Yes.
And similarly for Congress?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, there are minor grumblings about portions of either of those two corridors as well.
I can appreciate that. We're presented with one thing and said, approve it or not. Right.
Right.
And we don't know anything about the background of the analytic considerations or the political considerations among the alternatives. So, I mean, it's okay with me, but I just want to know a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we answer yes to those things.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Okay.
All right. Table 2 in your priority list is for our local initiatives program. So, just, you know, read the information before it. I'm just highlighting a couple things off of that. The project on SR 15 out west, US 441, was removed from the list. So they initially applied, you know, they gave us their estimate, and they basically, FDOT came back and said, we need $5 million worth of right-of-way to implement this project. So it grew from like a $1 or $2 million, you know, dollar project to $7 million. So we staff is removing it from the list because of the $5 million right-of-way. We don't want to pay for that.
SR 15 is which route? That locally?
Yes.
No, it's leading. It's southwest
Pahokee,
corner
right?
Of Pahokee.
Surely.
It leads into Pahokee.
Okay.
And it's an unfortunate deletion, frankly, because it was a good project. There are residential communities along the corridor that do not have pedestrian and bicycle facilities connecting them to the city municipal area. It's just a constrained right of way, and so. The city threw it at us and said, we think you could build us a pathway for $400,000. And then DOT looked at the feasibility of constructing it and said, no, we actually don't have room. We'd have to buy right-of-way from a number of parcels along here. We think it's a $5 million acquisition and then $2 million construction. That's bigger than what this program was intended to advance.
Okay.
All right. So really, there were 9 new applications that we reviewed, and then there were 5 projects with no funding in the last PIP. So there's 14 projects that are basically on your list with no money on them. And those projects are in Appendix D, which is the last page of the priority list. And all these projects need $17.2 million to fully implement. And then our question for you guys is, Royal Palm Beach, they applied for local initiatives, and they also applied for the next section for transportation alternatives dollars. Through staff's process, they're in the money on that smaller grant. So I think it's $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have them in the money on our list. So our question is, should we remove them from our list, from table 2? And it's number 25.
So
they applied twice because this was eligible for more money and they were doing a lot more sidewalks and improvements. So transportation alternatives, they have about half of the list, I think.
When presented with a trough,
Yes.
Okay. we have to make a decision. We have to make a recommendation.
It's a recommendation on, you know, do we just kick them off this list because they already they're going to receive that money?
Think you don't allow them to double dip, take them off one list or the other.
Okay. All right, so all in favor of taking them off the which list do you recommend that they be taken off?
They'll be taken off table two. They're part of number 25.
Right.
So we're all on the
page. Take 25. Okay. So we're recommending, so the motion is to recommend they take be taken off number as number 25 on table two. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And I just wanted to highlight that basically I think number 16 and on are all the new projects that, you know, we received in this latest round.
Oh, okay.
So there's, you can kind of see the order of what the MPO thinks that how the funding should trickle down. So we wanted to finish off, you know, numbers one through there and then apply money, you know, down the table.
Okay, so 16 is the first new project?
Yes.
Oh. And that's for the county?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the county or
yes.
The municipalities?
It's the county.
Oh. Okay.
And then you'll kind of see, like you guys saw the trolley presentations and bus shelter stuff, so you can see throughout the list that's how staff ranked it.
Table three is the Transportation Alternatives Program. So the local the Transportation Alternatives Program receives local applications annually. For the last few years, the program has steadily increased in the amount of funding that's allocated for Palm Beach County. Some of the highlighted changes that we want to note are that, one, seven projects went to construction in fiscal year 15. One of those, one project that was scheduled to be constructed in fiscal year 15 was removed due to right-of-way issues. And another highlighted change is that one project from fiscal year 16 has been withdrawn due to lack of public support. So those are two things that we want to make sure that we kind of iron out in our next rounds of applications. The question for the committee regarding this program is whether or not Beltway should stay on the list contingent on funding design. So a little bit of background on that. On the table that you have in your agenda, you may notice that there's an asterisk next to the Beltway project. That's because this project was underestimated by the applicant. Initially, the project was scoped for about $300,000. FDOT did their review and discovered that the project should have been estimated at $618,000. Furthermore, FDOT would not lab certify Beltway, which means that FDOT would have to do the construction, and if they do the construction, they would have to do the design. Design would cost at least $150,000. In order for Beltway to accept the funds that they've been awarded through our TAP process, we're suggesting that they fund the $150,000 for design of that project. So that's our question on the table.
Comments?
Questions on that?
So what you're saying is the number 17, it would be constructed by FDOT.
Yes.
Because Belgrade is not authorized to be receiving front from FDOT.
They
would
say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not authorized to administer the project.
Right. And you're asking Beltway to fund $150,000?
Yes.
Okay.
It kind of puts some skin in the game.
Of the 619?
No,
in
it's
addition
a separate.
To,
yes.
It's separate.
In addition to.
All right.
So the 619 is what FDOT would spend on actual construction, but they have to, it has to be designed, and they don't want to spend the FDOT money for design, so they're asking Beltway to put up the design money. Is that right?
Right.
Have we ever asked a municipality who had this circumstance in the past to put money up to design a local initiative fund project?
Transportation
alternatives. Okay, so
this is true. Yeah.
Transportation
alternatives. Right. So the answer is yes.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure about in this circumstance. What? Maybe you could define that a little more carefully for me.
All Well, what I don't want to read in the Palm Beach Post is the MPO is asking Dudley to fund $150,000 of engineering, and we're not asking any other municipality whether it be what's
right.
Right.
So here's the
thing. Before you answer, because my question kind of tied into that, and what's the impact, economic impact, knowing what we know, how does it affect Belgrade? You know, if we ask them to do that, is there really no chance that the project's going to happen then?
Okay, so in reverse order, answering your question first. Conversations preliminarily with Belgrade indicate that they think, scrambling for funding, that they should be able to come up with the required money for the design. So preliminarily, it looks favorable. And we would say, okay, let's keep them on the list. Let them come up with the design money, and then we'll reimburse. We'll give the funding to DOT to build the project that they've identified. Status quo for this program is that every applicant pays for design.
Oh.
Because this is a reimbursement, a cost reimbursement grant, which means you as a local government say, please MPO, give us authority to reimburse up to an amount for eligible construction items. And then if we give them a yes, they go forward, they design the project, they enter into an agreement through the DOT to facilitate the reimbursement, they build the project with their own money, they pay the invoices with their own money, and then for eligible items, they get reimbursed. But their skin in the game is they have to do all the design work themselves, and they have to administer the construction of the project themselves, and then get the reimbursement for whatever eligible items they construct. Belgrade is not eligible because of their staffing to administer the process. So to make it an apples to apples, we're actually trying to establish consistency, not create a difference. We're saying, okay, we'll give you more than you asked for, a lot more, because DOT would have to build the project, and it's going to cost them more to construct it. With the caveat that just like everyone else would have to pay for consultant design fees or pay in-house staff to design their projects, you pay the department's expenses to design your project.
And so, if I understand, and so is there a possibility that they actually get reimbursed for that money spent anyway?
For design?
For design, no. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Up to this point, we have never funded. Never
well, through any
to
other.
To my knowledge, we have never funded design.
Right.
Of
well, I'm not saying we or the MPO, but any other new grants or anything.
And frankly, we're not opposed to Belgrade finding someone else's money.
Right.
To pay the design expense.
Okay. So what you're saying is on all of these projects, these municipalities will pay for the design of
their own design. Yes.
And not get reimbursed for it.
Correct.
Okay.
And in this particular case, it's either 17, if not 17, then 18.
Correct.
And we're dealing with one case with missing sidewalks near schools, and the other case with upgrading existing sidewalks near schools to ADA standards.
Which I think indicates why one was ranked above the other.
Although the Royal Palm Beach, number 16, was upgrading existing sidewalks for ADA standards too.
As well as 12, 11.
Well, the nice thing about the TA program is if you're in the money, you get reimbursed.
Yeah.
I mean, you can finish first or fifth, but as long as you're above the cut line, you
and
get money in that particular year.
Okay.
All
right.
So we're saying, what you're asking us is to allow 17. You're saying 17 should be funded before 18. Okay. So
it was ranked higher from
right. Okay.
From the committee.
So one to 17 is basically one pot of funds.
Well, so they're segregated by year.
Agreed. Other than by year.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the way it plays out, I think, the bottom five, so 13 through 17 are hitting one pot of money for fiscal year 19.
Okay.
So I guess I'm a little bit... I'm not sure I understand now why we're being asked this question. If all the municipalities on the list have to provide their own design funds, why is this a special case?
I think it's because not sure if they would be able to come in the time to.
But why is that different for any other municipality? I mean, it's, so they're on the list. Oh, like, look, we, all of a sudden we don't have the money for this project, then, you know.
So it goes away.
Yeah.
That's a decent question.
It's twice as much as the original cost.
I'm not aware of the committee, I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
But all of these are designed in-house. That's the kicker, to be lab certified, you have to have the staff to actually to design it. So that's what all those other agencies are doing. Belgrade can't become lab certified through DOT, so DOT is saying you don't have the staff.
So Belgrade is special because it does not have the in-house capability of doing it, whereas all the other communities do.
Do.
Not certified.
And they do it a lot cheaper, frankly. So that's why DOT is saying if you want this to happen, you need to pay us to design it, and then we'll build it with RTA funds.
Okay.
I see. I think we should keep it on the list.
All in favor?
Question. This seems like a lot of money to design stupid sidewalk. I mean, I used to do this at West Palm. I can tell you what they're going to do. And DOT has books with the design. You just go do it. But, I mean, if that's what they got to do, it's, you know, you need sidewalk in your school, which we always prioritize it, is you don't want kids in the street. ADA is ramps, which is good, but at least you're off the road.
Well, I think some of it has to, must have to do with on-site assessment of impediments of one kind or another. I mean, actually, the design of the ramp,
yeah,
whatever the standard, but it's a question of what you have to do to put
it in. Have to do it because existing stuff is different because you're always packed in and you're doing crazy things, but new stuff. But I mean, they'll have to go out and look and make sure they're not running over the sprinklers and cables and such. But I know they have standards, and it'll be 4 or 5 people. I mean, I'm still with you.
Yeah, DOT society has a lot of oversight built into it.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why the cost is up.
500.
Yeah. Right.
But that's the way it has to be, and I just was like, you know, it's unfortunate for Belgrade. I'll say pay extra for black and white turf. But they need sidewalks, so that's what they do. So I'll vote yes.
So do you have your answer?
Keep it on the list.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Do we have to do anything with respect to the whole thing?
Yeah. Where are we at this point? Where we have to make our consensus?
Yeah, I mean, take a consensus on the third.
Right,
component.
So I was going to say, we didn't formally vote. Or,
yeah.
So,
you want to make
a motion? Do you need a motion or make a motion?
Okay.
Any second?
Second.
I mean, this is for leaving Belgrade on the list.
Yeah.
Correct,
yes.
But we haven't approved the whole thing. Right? That's different.
We're not to do that.
No. We did it piece by piece, didn't we?
No, we just answered those questions.
But
there are other items on the priority list that,
Oh, okay.
Right, we're voting on this. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we voted on Belgrade, and then do we need to vote on the entire list?
I would guess so.
Or do we?
Or does it, or is the, or does the board care?
So we had this conversation this morning, because one of the members didn't want to have his vote construed in support of US 1 as a multimodal addition to the major list as supporting the state road 7 extensions. And so he wanted a separate vote, but then we just clarified that he voted no and it didn't affect the recommendation overall and put a footnote as to why. I don't know if that's where you're going.
Yes.
But I think we can do that, same sort of thing, because you sort of handle each component of our priority list.
Right,
separate.
Individual.
And I think the motion for the first one was to approve the major list with US 1 on it. So if you want us to note that you objected to the inclusion of State Road 7 in that vote, that's fine.
Well, my objection is to the notation of moving funds forward for State Road 7. I understand it's been the priority forever.
Okay.
I believe that the notation of advancing construction to FY17 is purely a political statement and not a realistic one. and therefore I don't think political stuff ought to be in these things. Okay. I mean, there's not a snowball's chance in hell of that being ready for construction in FY17. And I think FDOT recognized that, and that's why they moved it back. I'm just guessing. But
I can convey that message.
Okay. And then this was already termed, this was already asked of FDOT, if I remember correctly, to advance it in this year's tip.
Well, what happened was they presented the work program in December. The board said, we object to the delay. And the department's response was, we will work with you in the development of 17 through 21 to try to bring it to an earlier year.
Okay.
We'll see how the try goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so what do you want us to do at this point? What do we need to do at this point?
Did you say, yeah, we're good with the TA list?
I'm going to introduce
Sun Sui and Marjorie. I'm going to mispronounce your last name. Marjorie's with the DOT District 4 office, and Sun Sui is a consultant working on this Northwood crossover project, and we wanted to make sure the committee members were informed about the project and give them an opportunity to come forward and tell you a little bit about where we are.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for having us this afternoon. I am the project manager for the Northwood Connection project. These projects are part of a bigger endeavor to build three connections linking the South Florida Rail Corridor and the FEC 9 in Miami-Dade County and in Palm Beach County. The two projects we have in Palm Beach County are in the Northwood area. Today we want to give you an overview of what happened so far, what are the improvements that we propose and the project schedule, and I'll let some sort of keep it from there.
Good afternoon. So the project part of a larger project that Marjorie mentioned, we call it South Florida Freight and Passenger Rail Enhancement. The two projects that we're going to talk about today, I'll refer to them as Phase 1A, which is rehabbing an existing railway in the Northwood area, and Phase 2 is a new Northwood connection, which is a new alignment. We'll talk more about them as we go forward. And I'm sorry, this is kind of set to the timers, so it's advancing a little backwards. So the project is located in the city of West Palm Beach. That's the jurisdiction between the Florida East Coast Railway and the South Florida Rail Corridor. So FEC, shown in orange, they serve freight today, and that's where the future all-aboard Florida project is being proposed, which is a separate project from this one. And also, Tri-Rail Coastal Link is proposed along the FEC, which is a separate project that we're going to talk about today. And the South Florida Rail Corridor in purple, where Tri-Rail runs, serves Amtrak, Tri-Rail, and CSX Freight today. The purpose of this South Florida Freight and Passenger Rail Enhancement Project is to provide an active rail connection between the two railroads, South Florida Rail Corridor and the FEC, to improve freight mobility. And that what that will do is it will connect the major ports to intermodal centers in a more efficient way and balance the freight movement throughout the region, which will result in enhanced capacity on the roadway network and freight efficiency. The project is intended to serve existing and future FEC freight, but not higher than historical level. So it's not introducing new freight traffic, it's shifting it from the FEC to the South Florida Rail Corridor. In the future, once this rail infrastructure is built, it could also potentially serve Tri-Rail Coastal Link through potentially Tri-Rail extension to Jupiter, but that would be studied as part of a separate project. Where we're at in the project timeline is this project went through an environmental study in 2013, and what started really the expedited project delivery that you kind of see here, because today we're in the design phase for the project, is in 2013, FDOT applied for a Federal Railroad Administration Tiger Grant. Tiger Grant, it's an acronym for the Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery, I'm sure you're familiar with. And so this project competed among many projects among the nation and won an award. The types of projects that win awards are projects like this, where it produces a significant benefit to the region in terms of mobility. And so the project won $13.75 million. And we actually have the signed grant last year, but as soon as we applied and realized that we had won, we started the environmental study. So the environmental study was completed in June 2014, and that was after public input was received at a public workshop in December of 2013 in the Northwood area. And after the Tiger Grant was signed, after the environmental study was completed, we proceeded with the design phase. We did just recently on May 12th had a design public workshop to present the results of where we're at in the design process, which was 30% design plans, to the public for input. So where we're at right now in the projects, and I'll go through the schedule a little bit later, is the rehab project that's rehabbing the track that's out there today. It's going to, from the 30% plans, proceed to equipment procurement and construction this fall. And then the new alignment, DOT is going to develop that project to 100% design plans with an overlapping right-of-way phase because the right-of-way impacts are involved. And that will continue through 2017. So we'll talk more about each individual project. But just to let you know where we are in the design phase process, I mentioned that we started the design phase last year, right when the environmental study was completed. We conducted data collection spring of last year and proceeded with design analysis and agency coordination with the city of West Palm Beach and all the different railroad operators and railroads involved, FEC, CSX, SFRTA, and DOT. We have developed those 30% design plans I mentioned. They've been provided to the agencies for review and to Federal Railroad Agency for review and comment to make sure they're consistent with the Tiger Grant requirements. They've also been distributed to the public and are available on our website, railprogress.com, in case you're interested. So now what we're doing is finalizing those 30% plans based on the public input that was received. To talk a little bit more about the project, it's in the city of West Palm Beach, north side of downtown, in the Northwood area around 25th Street. This is really the project area that we've studied in the design phase and the environmental phase. It's an area where there are primarily industrial uses. The Phase 1A track, which you see in orange here, that is track that's there today, but it does need to be rebuilt because it's in poor condition. The green is the new Northwood connection that will require right-of-way to be completed, and there's no residential property impacts with that. It's all industrial property or vacant land uses. But it's just west of the Northwood Village on the east side of the FEC. So the Phase 1A project that you see here in orange, the project will rehabilitate the existing single track that's there today. There's about 30 feet of right-of-way. It's about 3/4 mile of total track. And this project, as we finish 30% plans, it will go to design build construction this fall. And so what that means is the contractor will finish the final design plans through coordination with FDOT and the railroads. And then the project will probably actually hit the ground shovel, ready as around spring of next year. The project provides the ability for freight to move in this northwest to southeast orientation. So what ultimately this is designed to serve freight to the north. In the interim condition, until the new alignment is built, it will serve freight coming this way and coming back around to the Southport Rail Corridor. So when we rehab this project, we will be upgrading the highway rail ray crossings. There's 6 of them, new crossings with the rail, new signal equipment, for phase one. Phase two is shown in green, and this provides the northeast to southwest orientation. The primary freight movement is southbound, as we see, the southbound Southland Rail Corridor down to the Port of Miami. So that, is the primary movement. With this project, it's a single track. It will be developed within 50 foot of right of way. And the green here, the green circles are the grade crossings that will be new developed. And this alignment and this typical section was developed after several years of public outreach study and agency involvement to get to this point. The phase two alignment will result in about 2.4 acres of right-of-way impact. The right-of-way phase is overlapping the design phase that we're in right now. So property owners are being contacted as we speak about their, if they're interested in advanced right-of-way acquisition. To talk a little bit about the rail operations, the train operations, I mentioned that the project is not generating new freight traffic, but it is shifting traffic from the FDC to the South Florida Rail Corridor. When we developed the project and did the environmental study, we needed to coordinate with FDC to determine about how many trains would use the railroad. And it's estimated that up to 6 trains in each direction could use phase 1A until phase 2 is built. Once that phase 2 new alignment is built, phase 1A will really only serve freight to the north and some of the inland port facilities. And then the phase 2 alignment will carry those 6 trains. The freight trains are anticipated to operate after 7 p.m., and because of the geometry of the rail, the design speeds are restricted to around 15 to 20 miles per hour. In developing the project, one of the major items that we coordinated with the city of West Palm Beach was this industrial area here. It is part of one of the city's community redevelopment agency areas. So we conducted an economic analysis on the revenue impacts and the economic benefits as well associated with the new alignment where right-of-way is involved. And the study showed that while there is some property impacts because of the 2.4 acres, overwhelmingly there's a net present value of over $1 billion in regional benefits because of the increased freight mobility and efficiency of the transportation network. A noise and vibration study was conducted during the environmental study in 2013. For the phase 1A project, the track that's out there today, there was no significant impacts that were identified, and that's mainly because of the surrounding industrial noise and adjacent properties, as well as the historical and existing trains that have used that connection. For the phase two new alignment project, there's moderate noise impacts, but they're limited to around 20 homes in the North Tamarind community. After a review of the potential noise abatement for those 20 homes, it didn't meet federal criteria for achieving federal a noise reduction. And that's because there's a limited amount of homes that are impacted, and it's only 3 decibels. So the federal criteria makes you have to benefit noise much more than that. However, there are several safety measures that we've implemented as part of the project. The South Florida Rail Corridor is an existing quiet zone today. The FEC is not in this portion of Palm Beach County a quiet zone today, and the Phase 1 All Aboard Florida Project quiet zone is a little bit south of this. But in this section, FEC, the noise will not increase due to this project because, again, we're shifting freight trains. We're not adding more freight trains. So FDOT has implemented several safety measures into the project infrastructure. And one of those for phase two is the 4 quad gates at every one of the new grade crossings. When you implement the 4 quad gates at all the public crossings, that enables the local municipality to file a notice of intent for a quiet zone. So in coordinating with the city of West Palm Beach, they plan to file that notice of intent for the phase two to have a quiet zone along this connection with the infrastructure that FDOT is providing as part of the project. It's very similar for phase 1A for the rehab project. There is no quiet zone on that track today, but it's also not being used. It's been several years since there have been trains on it. And so FDOT has included some four quad gates at two crossings and some other upgrades with new signal equipment at the other grade crossings. And that all that infrastructure enables the infrastructure necessary to meet a quiet zone for phase 1A as well. So we're coordinating that with the city of West Palm Beach. They've let us know that they intend to file for a quiet zone, and we're DOT is providing them the technical information to support that. Letting you know a little bit about the potential traffic impacts. The trains I mentioned are proposed at night. What that will do is minimize traffic delays when the gates come down. There are no significant impacts anticipated with the trains operating at night, because there's not going to be more than one train per hour with six trains overnight. A traffic study was done, and it's available on the project website. The design plans also include some enhancements for better traffic coordination between the railroad and the road, local roads. Some of those are signal preemption between the different highway signals and some modifications to the traffic signal on 25th Street and Tamarack. The project has been developed with several partners. I mentioned FRA. Other project partners that contributed funding to the project are SFRTA, the Operator Tri-Rail. They contributed $2.5 million towards the project, as well as the FEC and CX. They contributed $1 million each to the project. The total Phase 1A project cost is around $13 million, with Phase 2 at about $27 million. The overall project is $47 million. So with these contributions, the FRA contributions, and then the remainder that FDOT is contributing, the project is, you know, funded through construction. Other key stakeholders are TCRPC, Palm Beach MPO, and Palm Beach County. When we had the public workshop on May 12th, we had 43 public attendees. And remember, this is the second public workshop we've had in the Northwood area. So we had fewer people this time than we did at the one in 2013. We also had a Northwood Hills HOA presentation the week following the public workshop at their request. But we did receive a lot of good comments from the public. Mainly, the public was asking us questions about the quiet zone, potential for a quiet zone, so we provided that information. All the other questions were just informational. This shows the project schedule. The orange is phase 1A, the blue is phase 2, the new alignment. So you can see where we are in 2015. We're finalizing the 30% plans for phase 1A. Phase 2 will continue to 100% design through spring of next year. And just looking down at the phase 1 process, as soon as the design is completed, we go into equipment procurement, because there's no right-of-way with phase 1A, and then construction. Construction, this includes finalizing the design plans through 100%. The design build contractor will do that. So the actual construction will be sometime early in 2016. We're working out the actual construction duration with the railroads right now. But the intent is by late 2016 to make sure construction is finished for that project. For phase 2, right-of-way phase is ongoing, as I mentioned. It's overlapping the design phase. Right-of-way will be completed in 2017. Then the equipment procurement, and then construction starting early 2018 and concluding before the end of 2018. So that's the project schedule. And then the contacts, if you have any other information after this meeting, it's Marjorie Lair, the FDOT project manager, and then we have a secondary contact as well, Robert Boston, one of the FDOT project advisors for the project. And we will take any questions or comments.
I heard two things that I hadn't heard before, maybe because I wasn't listening before, and that is the existing connection has not had a train for 2 years?
It's been several years. I think the last time that they recorded them is 2006-07 time frame. It's been several years. And between then and now, the only times that track has been used is just kind of back on for a few maintenance and back off. And that's it. Not continuous service since 2006-2007.
And you mentioned that the freight traffic would only occur at night. Currently, freight traffic occurs on the FEC during the daytime, is that right?
Yes.
So it would be restricted from the daytime once the connections, once these projects are done?
The FEC trains that you see today on the FEC, this project doesn't dictate how they decide to move the freight on the FEC, but for the connection and the moving the trains over to the South Florida Rail Corridor, those trains were environmentally cleared to have it after 7 p.m. 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And so that's when they're supposed to run the trains on the Northwood connection down to South Florida Rail Corridor. They'll continue to run trains on the FEC during the day. This project doesn't change that. And it also, we don't tell them which train they have to move. It's just the DOT is providing the connection. And then we did the environmental study up to that maximum of 6 trains across the connection.
Okay, so there currently there are freight trains going on both lines, right? And this is to add 6 freight trains in each direction from the FEC in the north to the SF, whatever it's called.
South Florida Rail Corridor. Yeah. Let me pull up the map so you can.
Does this also divert from the FEC to the CSX?
So here's a good one. Here's a good one. What this project does is there's around 13 freight trains running today on the FEC.
Right.
Okay. And there's around 4, so these are FEC freight trains, and then on the South Florida Rail Corridor, which is where Tri-Rail and CSX run today, there's around 4 CSX trains running today. And, you know, those numbers go up and down a little bit because of their market conditions and their, so these 13 trains that run here, up to 6 of them will use this connection and be on the South Florida Rail Corridor. So it's not a 13 plus 6, it's a 13 minus 6. Now, the first year this is operational, they may only decide to move 2 trains. You know,
sure.
But we environmentally cleared up to 6 with Federal Railroad Administration, and then they'll have to adjust that based on the market conditions. That their intent from the coordination and improving freight mobility for the region is, you know, the ports are moving to more intermodal containers, longer freight trains, and trying to schedule the freight trains better throughout the 24 hours, so that way it's least impactful on the public. And this project provides an ability to make some of those freight transfers.
And revitalizing the 1A, the existing connection.
Right.
That will allow freight from the ports to the south that are close to the FEC line to go up through the CSX to an intermodal facility up in
Winter Haven.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Ultimately, that's what this is for, and they anticipate no more than 1 train making that movement during a day. In the interim condition, until this phase 2 is built, they will use this for some trains to get to Port Miami. So what they'll do is you'll see the trains will come down the southbound FEC, the intermodal yards right here, they'll reverse and then come back across phase 1A and come down.
Why is the FEC wanting to move 6 trains is the destination different on the FEC versus the FRC?
The destination isn't different. Really, their primary, you know, where most of these freight trains are going is to the ports, Port Everglades and Port Miami. They also have industry customers along the FEC that they have to keep, you know, along the FEC. So they have to keep a certain amount of trains. But let's say that there's a train from Jacksonville that goes all the way to Port Miami, and there are several of those. So what happens is today the trains go down from Jacksonville all the way down to Port Miami. But as you get to West Palm Beach, the speeds decrease because you're in downtown areas, and there's more grade crossings along the FEC because historically it was built first. So there's more places where there's an interaction between vehicle and pedestrian conflict. So for FEC, what it allows them to do is create more efficient mobility. There's less grade crossings on the southward rail corridor. And then with them implementing their subsidiary, all over Florida being implemented on FEC, there's going to be more trains. So this balances moves some of the freight over to the FEC or to the southward rail corridor for improved freight mobility, but it also allows for more efficiency as all over Florida moves forward.
So, but then there's a connection farther south that take those trains back to the ports.
Correct. And we don't have that on the map today, but where that is it's in Miami-Dade County. And it is...
Back to one of the ports.
Yeah. Only to Miami.
It's in Miami-Dade County, and it's along 70. If you're familiar with like Hialeah, it's along 71st Street. And where the Tri-Rail Metro Rail Transfer Station is at 79th Street, it's just south of that. So the two railroads meet today, but there's no connection between the two, and this project will also provide that connection.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you.
All right.
So the next item is the summary report, which is June 18th at the FTOB.
Choosing not to modify the TIF.